Thank you, David. Good morning, everybody. My name is Lori Dorfman. I direct the Berkeley Media Studies Group, a project of the Public Health Institute. You need to say good morning back to me. Okay, I just want to make sure that you know, you're all out there and that I'm not really in a dream because it feels so early to me, even though I'm from the West Coast. Okay, so David asked me to talk a little bit about framing public health and challenges we face when we're trying to talk about health, equity, fairness, and the solutions that we're seeking for big public health problems. So I'm going to lay that out and give us a vocabulary to refer to talk about this, and then we'll get into more details in the panel about how people have approached these different issues. At the Berkeley Media Studies Group, we do three things. The first thing we do is study the news media for how they portray different public health issues. The reason we do this is because if you want to do what our teachers in public health have told us is the best thing to do for population health, and that is improve the environments in which people live. It's going to make the biggest difference for the most people. Then you have to pay attention to how those environments got that way and what we're going to do about it. And if you want to do something about it, you have to get to the people who make the rules about what those environments are and how they look and how they operate. And in our society, in this day and age, that's policymakers. So if we as public health people want to have a conversation with decision makers and policymakers, we have to pay attention to what they're paying attention to. They pay attention to the news. So that's why we study the news. We extract from that an understanding of how a problem would be understood if that were the only way you got information, if the only way you knew about food systems was from the newspaper. What would you know, and very important, what wouldn't you know? And that tells us a lot about what the starting point of conversations have to be, and that's where we apply what we learned to the second thing we do, media advocacy training and strategic consultation for advocates, and then a little bit of work with the other side of that equation, the reporters. So for us, the news media are very important because they set the agenda and they frame the terms of debate. So I'm going to talk about a little of that and the constraints that we face. The three things I want to cover in my little 10-minute mini course here is, first, what our default frame is in our culture, and that's individualism, and why that makes systems, including food systems, and environments hard for people to see and understand. It's just hard for them to recognize beyond the individual frame. The second thing I want to talk about are the structural barriers around class, gender, and especially race, and how those become invisible as structures if we can't see the environment, and how that limits us if what we want to do is include justice in the conversation about food systems. And then finally, I want to land this on news frames because, then, as I said, the news is the public agenda setter. Even today, even as news is in this big transition and dismantling, and we have all kinds of citizen journalism like Twitter and Facebook and things like that, what the studies tell us is that right now the agenda is still being set by the mainstream press. So we have to pay attention to what that says and how it's being framed. And a key issue there is that those frames tend to diminish the role of government. If we circle back to the first thing that I said, if we want to change the rules and structures of our society to improve systems, including food systems, government must be a player. And if government is demonized in a way that it is today, in my lifetime, I'd say it's never been demonized like this, it makes our job that much harder. Doesn't mean government's always right. Half the time we're hammering on government to make changes, but we have to believe that it can and that those structures are what can form a society that we all want to live in and that can benefit everybody. So those are the three topics, and the first thing I want to start on is framing, and I'm going to do this really quickly. People know this term now. It's been in our political discourse for a while. What I want to show you is how it works. So the first thing I want you to do is tell me what it says behind that orange box. Say it loud, say it proud. There you go, except not so much. Oh my goodness, look at that. Okay, look at what your brains did. They took a tiny little cue. They filled in the blanks. You didn't have to say, brain, what does that say? You shouted it out, health equity. In this instance, you were wrong. But that still illustrates how your brain works. I'll tell you, I stole this from a food company website. They didn't use health equity. They used kids in neuroscience, but it worked the same way. Anyway, you're trolling around on the interwebs. You find all this stuff. Okay. But what this illustrates is that our brains operate in a way that takes a little cue from the outside and fills it in. Now, we do this with words, and we do this with ideas, and we do this with stories. And that means if our story is different than a mainstream story, we have to be sure we are queuing up the pieces of that story that make the entire landscape visible. Because in our society, we tend to focus on the individual. This is a typical frame for obesity, for example. It has nothing to do with that woman on the left there. But I found this fascinating headline. It's your fault, Fatso. What the whole headline says from the Boston Herald about, I think this is 2004, it says, healthcare heavies blame consumers for soaring rates. It's your fault, Fatso. We have soaring healthcare rates because you ate too much, you don't have willpower, essentially, is what that says. But then what cracks me up is the little headline on the bottom. Some of you in the back might not be able to see it. It says, even though Massachusetts obesity rate is low. So it's not even true there. And yet, this frame so dominates how we understand the world and where responsibility lies. Now, we obviously need personal responsibility. That's a really important part of what we do and how we operate and what we value. And sometimes we need a lot more personal responsibility, especially in high places. But there's more going on than just the personal responsibility. And back to those cues I showed you, because responsibility, personal responsibility, is the dominant frame in our society, it needs no bolstering. It needs no queuing up. It's the first thing people will go to if nothing else is suggested to them. But if we want them to see something different, we have to cue up that part of the environment. Right now, our cultural understanding of how the world works and where responsibility lies is out of balance. We do have more than one set of ideas about this, but the reason this scale is out of balance is because the stories we tell ourselves through news and other means, by and large, focus on what individuals should do for themselves to make themselves and their families better. And very little focuses on what we as a community or society should do, that institutional accountability that is required to change those systems and structures if we're going to have the just and healthy society we're all seeking. That's why the scale is out of balance. And this is true in the news media as well. Study after study of content in the news shows that if you take a news story and ask a basic question, if you're doing content analysis, and say, if the only way you understood this issue was from laying the responsibility at the foot of an individual or including government and institutions as part of the solution, the first thing you'd find in your content analysis is that you have both kinds of stories. You have stories that land problem at the foot of individuals, and you have stories that include institutions and government as part of the solution. The second thing you'd see is that you have far more stories that focus on personal responsibility. It's as if they close in on the portrait of a person or an event without embedding that portrait on a broader landscape. In public health, we are all about the landscape because we are about populations and we are about prevention, and we have to make that landscape visible. Doesn't mean we leave out personal responsibility. Doesn't mean in a news story we leave out the news hook or the person or the story or the event that caused that news story to be newsworthy in the first place. It means that when we talk about it, when we describe it, we have to cue up those portions of that landscape to make it visible so the solutions that we're seeking become reasonable. Otherwise, people don't understand what our solutions are, why they matter, and how to include them. This goes back to deep-seated ideas about justice in our society, and justice is supported by everybody. It's how they interpret it. And the cultural norm, the default frame of individualism, has a market justice orientation that focuses on personal responsibility with the idea that you're on your own. This is an idea from Jared Bernstein that Clinton echoed in his speech at the Democratic Convention. You might have heard him talk about the yo-yos and the wits. This is Jared Bernstein's ideas, and I've kind of mashed them up here with Daniel Beecham, who's written a lot about social justice and public health. Jared Bernstein says the yo-yos are the people who believe you're on your own. And that's important. We have to be self-reliant. We have to be able to do things for ourselves. It's important that parents teach their children about self-reliance. It's just not our only value, and it shouldn't be our exclusive value. We do have a duty to our families, but and the idea there, if you go down that line of thinking, is that government interferes in this, and we should keep government as small and far away as possible. And in some instances, that's true. But there's another set of values about justice that have to do with shared responsibility, the idea of the wits, we're in this together, which means that not only do we have duties to ourselves and our families, but we also have duty to the collective good. And in that scenario, it means that government is important because it protects, it puts in the systems and structures that allow us to do something together as a society that not one of us could do alone. And that's the important fundamental value that needs to be expressed when we illustrate that landscape. So the implications of framing is that if you're on this track, personal responsibility or institutional accountability, it takes you down a different road. So we have to cue that up. I wanted to make one mention of race, and then I'll land on where we could end up. What did you tell me, David? 5 minutes? Okay. So I wanted to mention structural racism, give it a shout out, if you will, because it's so difficult for us to talk about. It's at the fundamental core of what makes some of our systems unjust, and it's a difficult thing in our society to talk about, partly because it gets personalized. And when we're talking about structures and systems, we're not talking about personal discrimination. We're talking about the mechanisms that are in place that limit whole sections of our society from the kinds of opportunities that others have. And the birdcage is an interesting image here, because it's hard to talk about these systems and structures. They are abstract, even though they're tangible and real as well. The reason I like the birdcage and the quote about it, which is that opportunities are produced and regulated by institutions, institutional interactions, and individuals together. This is a system orientation. The birdcage is interesting because the bird is trapped not by one bar, but by the whole set of bars. If you take away one bar, it doesn't help the bird. We have a system of education, we have a food system. Within our food system, we have all kinds of systems. And we have a justice system, we have a public health system. It's how these systems are working together that reinforce restrictions on whole parts of society. And there's more we can talk about framing government, and we probably don't have time right now, but we can come back to that. So I just want to land on so these are our big barriers and challenges. How do we get out of this if we want to talk about it a little bit more effectively? So the first thing I want to tell you is that even though David said we're going to talk about how to talk about this, message is never first. It's never first. You never start with message. People who come to us at Berkeley Media Studies Group who are concerned they don't know what to say, it's usually because they haven't figured out what to do. You have to know what you want to change in the world first. You have to know how you're going to change it. That's the coalition building, the advocacy, the policy plumbing that has to be in place. And then you have to be able to say why. Why do you want it changed? And that's where the values comes in. And that's where sometimes in public health we fall down on the job. You know, we can put our hand on our hip and say, you know, almost 50 million people uninsured. Well, you know, so what? Most of them aren't sick. Is that a problem? Might be a problem for them. Is it a problem for people who do have insurance? If we can't express why it's a problem for all of us and what that means and why that matters, we're not going to get anybody to understand the magnitude of the problem, because they will dismiss the facts if they can't connect with the values in the frame. The place where I think that we have an absence in our discussion of food systems that would help bring justice into the conversation is around labor. And I'm not going to go into this in great detail, but I'm going to point you to a few things. There was a conference at the University of California, Santa Cruz that was fabulous last February. All the videos from this conference are on Vimeo, V-I-M-E-O. If you Google labor across the food system and Vimeo, you'll find it. This was a conglomeration of academics and activists coming together to figure out not only how do we talk about this stuff, but how do we do something about labor all across the system? And so you could find those videos, and I encourage you to look at them. And then, if you go back to, it's not just what we say, it's what we do. I think there are some great recent examples of bringing labor into the conversation, from the Food Chain Workers Alliance, the Coalition of Monthly Workers, ROC, the Restaurant Opportunity Center United, and some labor organizations at the University of California. Their most recent study just came out, A Dime a Day, the Impact of the Miller-Harkin Minimum Wage Proposal on the Price of Food. There's a frame for you. That's all. Yes, it's going to cost us, but it's only going to cost us a dime a day. This is a part of the conversation that we have to expand if we want people to see the entire system and what these implications are. In public health, I think we focus so much on nutrients and a little bit on the environmental impact, and we can't leave labor out of this conversation. So to fix it, we have to act. We can't just say something. We have to do something. We have to cue that landscape early and often, make it visible, and say why it matters. Thank you.